All right, 6:02 in the Rose City. Time for Dirk Sprague, Portland sports leader, 105.1 The Fan, and the Fan Sports Network. Hello. Happy hump day, everybody.
What is happening?
Nice little delightful June 24th for you.
Dude, where the hell's the month going? We're a week away from July. Yeah. That kind of dawned on me yesterday. Everybody's talking about the what's coming up in the next couple of weeks. Oh, we got this week, and then it's the 4th of July. It's like, that's right. The 4th of July is in like a week and a half, man.
I golfed twice this past weekend, and the wife's like, man, you golfed twice. And I was like, yeah, I know, but you know, next week is your birthday. I'm not golfing.
I'm taking that weekend off.
Then it's the 4th of July. Probably not golfing.
That's 2 weeks.
That's 2 rounds, 3 weeks. That's not that much.
I had to cram this into that weekend because I know we're not going to play the next couple of weeks. My wife dropped a, you've golfed 3 times in the last 5 days. And I said, excuse me, 3 times, 5 days. Let's hold on a little bit.
Oh, she thought you golfed yesterday.
It's been twice in 4 days. I do not play golf with the Fan Golf. Yeah. Don't put that juju on me, okay? I'm not carrying that around. I did not play golf yesterday. I swung a club a couple of times, maybe. But I did not play a round of golf yesterday.
Yeah, the wife was like, how come you didn't take your new golf shoes? And I was like, I'm not playing.
We're not playing.
I didn't even wear a golf shirt this year. I just wore a t-shirt.
You're just like, in a tee out there hanging out.
What am I going to dress for the occasion? Yeah. I'm not swinging the clubs. The listeners are swinging the clubs.
There's a dress code out there. Put some clothes on. What's the matter with you?
Well, thank you. Yesterday was a delightful time, as it always is, to see all the listeners and meet people and, you know, just hear how long they've been listening to the station, to the show, and just watching them all swing the club on the par 3 sixth hole. And yeah, it was a great time yesterday. That was a fantastic, was it the 12th?
12th, I believe.
12th annual Fan Golf Classic yesterday. A smashing success out of Langan Farms.
It always is, man. It's a blast. The best part, the highlight for us is meeting listeners, right? And some of them we've met before and they come back and say hello and we remember them from last year. Other guys say hi for the first time. It's really cool. When people tell you, it's like a pinch yourself moment. Like, hey, I've been listening to the show for 10 years. Or, hey, I moved out of Portland and I still listen to the show on the app every day. Those kind of things are really awesome. The weather actually ended up being, it was hot. It was muggy. Wasn't as bad as maybe I thought it was going to be going in. It felt like mid-90s, like, ugh, it's going to be a disaster. And then a little cloud cover in the afternoon helped, so it wasn't too hot. Everybody seemed to have a delightful time. Mm-hmm. It's a hit, man. The Fan Golf Classic's a great time at Langdon every year.
I always have these random moments where somebody will come up, and it takes me like a second or two for things to click in my brain.
Put a name and a face together. Like,
well, I know the face.
Who is
what's
that guy?
The name?
I know
then,
that guy.
And then like it processes, it registers. And I'm ashamed to admit, yesterday I had a moment where we were hanging out. This group comes up in the morning round. They hit their par 3 shots, and an individual is walking off. And turns around, he said, you should play my song. And I shook his hand when he came up. I said, hey guys, how are you doing? Thanks for being out.
A little small talk before they hit their tee shots.
You know, just something real quick and easy breezy so you can hit your 92-yard par 3 shot.
That's right.
And I was like, I looked at this individual and I go, I know this person. And it was one of those, like, my brain wasn't working.
Whose face is this? I know this face.
I know this face. And walks off, and he turns, and he goes, play my song. And I start kind of like, yeah. And as I awkwardly go, yeah, I went, oh my God. Dude. That was Mike Hass.
Mike Hass said, you guys made it. You should play my song. You guys made it. We did as a station like 20 years ago.
We did, yeah.
Ropping the mop way back in the day. Who? Mike Hass.
But
who?
I hadn't seen him in a long time.
No, it's been a minute.
I never really formally introduced myself.
Mm.
But he walked off and said that. I'm like, oh, my God.
Yeah.
The all-time leading Oregon State receiver, the Biletnikoff winner himself.
To this day, nobody's broken that record.
And then it created a conversation of, unfortunately, I think the reality is, I can separate differences between Larry Fitzgerald and Terrell Owens.
Yes, you can.
Right?
You can tell.
T.O.'s got a pretty, it stands out, look, face. Larry Fitz has the nice ass with the great dreads.
You see that ass on Larry Fitzgerald. You're not. There's no confusion over who that
None
is.
None at all.
I could just show you the butt. You don't even need to see the face.
Like, dude, you can
show me Larry Fitz from behind, and I know immediately who that is.
You put it on an OnlyFans thing and say, which one is Larry Fitz? I'm going to be able to identify it.
I know that butt. It's a great butt.
And unfortunately, it created a conversation of white wide receivers.
You just kind of blend into the pack.
Yeah, tend to be it. So I ended up, we got through the morning round. We did the scoring. the winning score was debatable. We can get
it's
to that.
It's never controversial at a scramble. What are you talking about?
Yeah, we can talk about that.
Every winner's above board.
But we get through it. So we go back out to the par three for the afternoon round. And who comes back out?
Hanging out all afternoon.
Mike Hass with a dip and some. Yeah, exactly.
Who?
Comes out with a dip and he's got booze and hanging out, just having a good time at the hole with us. And I turn to him and I go, dude, I want to apologize. It, for whatever reason, I didn't recognize you. And he goes, it's okay, man. I don't recognize me sometimes. Which I thought was a really funny answer.
That's a great response.
And then I didn't want to. I thought, is this going to be an awkward thing that I would only do? And I lean and I go, we started talking about how white receivers tend to blend.
Yes, they're all gritty route runners.
He goes, yeah, we all look alike.
We're all 6'2" and white.
And we started laughing about it and talking about
no real
about
defining
that.
Features, but we run great routes. We have awesome hands. We're heady, smart players. We're gym rats in the door, out the door. First one in, last one out. You know, we all kind of blend together.
Mike Hass, you know, Wes Welker, Danny Amendola, right. You know, same thing.
Would have been great to have Mike Hass and Jeff Mail out there at the same time and to see if they look alike at this point as our two great wide receivers over the years. Oh, which one? Yeah, that's right. I think I know you.
Well, you know,
you.
I felt bad about it because I kept talking about it after he left.
We both
like, I
did.
Can't believe that.
Like, how did we just walk away from Mike Hass and not even know? The funny part for me was I threw him a football, too.
I know.
Because Joe Fisher brought a football this year, which, by the way, round of applause.
Oh, we're giving a round of applause for
I think so.
I think people were playing catch.
The football ended up being a big hit because on that par three, we had Angel's Envy, so people are taking their shots, and you got a little booze in there that can help out a little bit.
Yep.
But it's a scramble tournament, so you're waiting probably on every tee shot. And having something to like, dude, the number of teams that came through and just grabbed the football and started chucking it around, that was a good percentage of them. So that ended up being a hit. I threw my cast of football and then made a comment asking, I wonder if that's a full-size NFL football.
You thought that was a full-size?
I hadn't thrown a football in a long time. At least a bigger, like
those NFL footballs are way bigger than
they're
you
way
think.
Big, way bigger. I don't, dumb question on my part.
It's okay,
I will acknowledge in the moment, not my brightest football moment. And Mike Hass responded, "Yeah, that's not a full size NFL football." And I remember at the time thinking, "Who's this guy? How do you know?" Some random listener coming through.
That was what you're.
That
thinking
was my like.
What?
How would you know what a full size NFL football was? And then as he's walking off the tee box, saying, "You should play my song," I'm Mike Hass. I'm like. Definitely knows what a full-size NFL football feels like.
Yeah, he absolutely
I
would.
Think he has the answer to that question over me.
Yeah, look, we all have bad moments. It led me to go the white receiver route with you, and I'm like, how would you have felt if that was Jeff Mail and you didn't recognize him?
Would I have recognized Jeff Mail? I'd like to think I would, but I don't know if I would.
But, like, if you don't see somebody regularly, you have to kind of ask yourself, would I recognize somebody?
Would I recognize that person if they came through?
And we got into white athletes, and I'm like, how many white athletes would I see outside of the sport arena?
Sure.
Bump into and immediately go, right?
I know who you are.
One good one I came up with, Luke Ridnour.
Yeah.
Very distinguishable face. Like, look, I know the Luke Ridnour look. But also, I haven't seen Luke Ridnour in how many years?
When was the last time you saw a picture of Luke Ridnour?
What if he looks like Cooper Kupp now? What if he's got a big old grizzly beard?
Right.
And the hair is completely shaved off, so he's got kind of the bald head with the beard. Like, maybe I'd recognize him. And then Danny's like, oh, I saw Luke Ridnour last year, and I recognized him instantly. I go, where were you? Basketball game? Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. On a basketball floor?
Your mind is going, anybody over 6'1", I have to immediately try to say, who were they, or who are they, and what team did they play for?
Did this guy play in the NBA?
Are they sitting
or no?
Courtside? Are they over 6'1"?
Who invited them here?
Were they on a team?
I also feel like it's easier to do in basketball than football because of the helmet aspect of it. Like basketball, you get a upfront personal look at that face and those faces of the entire game. If you showed me a picture of Mike Hass's helmet, I remember the helmet. I remember what he looked like in the uniform, but the face inside the helmet, it's a little bit different. Last time we saw Jeff Mail, we had Jeff Mail in studio years ago. I can't remember if at the time we were 10 to noon or noon to 3.
We had him in studio?
We definitely had him in studio. I remember
it. Sure about that? I know he is on the show.
100% confident he was in studio.
Was he wearing a button-up shirt?
Yes, he came in
like
a business from the office, like he was taking a lunch break for whatever he was doing from work. And he came in, he was great, super nice, had a great time interviewing him. But to your point, that was the last time I saw Jeff Mail. And if Jeff Mail walked across the street from me, I don't know if it would immediately spark a, Jeff Mail.
Well, also
great Oregon white wide receiver.
Am I wrong? Wasn't it like right as the beard extravaganza of America kicked off?
Yes, you might have had a little facial hair, right? The face is going to look a little bit different.
And anybody with a beard now right. that started that 10 years ago, they ain't shaving that thing anymore.
No, at this point, you're holding on to it because it changes your facial features and you're not getting rid of that.
I wonder how many people have double chins and triple chins and they want to hide it. Right. That's a good thing to hide.
Right. Maybe our producer should while he's in Italy. That's another thought bubble I had.
Let's not get into that.
Let's grow a beard out, Swigart.
Can we not get into that?
There's a lot of neck meat there. I didn't realize that was there.
I didn't know
that was a thing.
We don't need to get into swag standing next to a penis.
Are you sure you don't want to talk about that?
I don't want to get into that.
Okay, all right. He's found some very nice architecture over in Italy. Yeah. He's found some very nice sculptures.
When somebody texts you that their wife says hi, I don't know what to do with that other than like...
Hi.
Say hi back.
Hi. Give the wave emoji. Give him one of those. The hand wave emoji. Hello. I hope you're having a delightful time drinking cocktails in Italy.
I don't know how sober he's been for that trip.
No, I don't think he's been very sober at all.
I think he's waking up boozing all day, and then boozing at night, and then passing out.
Yeah, every time we hear from him or see a tweet, it's something about, I just had a Negroni, or I just had a, you know, fill-in-the-blank here cocktail.
Right.
We're just getting the day started. We've got a long ways to go.
Help me with this.
Yeah, what do you got?
Who do you think are the white athletes you could never not recognize? So I'll give you one.
Ooh, it's a good question. Steve Nash is a good one.
I'm pretty sure he's much like me. He's follically challenged on his face. I don't think he can grow a beard.
Yeah,
I might be wrong on that.
He's always been cleanly shaven.
Always cleanly shaven, which makes me wonder, can he even do it? Steve Nash is a pretty good one.
Larry Bird.
If you saw Larry Bird,
he's maybe the most iconic white athlete.
Now he looks like an 85-year-old white grandma.
Now, are we talking, because I feel like quarterbacks are outliers here.
Well, I mean, obviously, Tom Brady, Steve Young,
Brett Favre,
yeah.
if you go down the list, Peyton Manning,
6'3",
they're all bigger
6'4".
Guys. I feel like you almost need to throw quarterbacks out of the question because that's such a prominent position in sports that we would all know those
guys. Luke Babbitt's like 6'8". See, that's tough. Basketball players are tough.
Or is he not wearing high socks when I see him?
He's wearing pants.
I don't know.
Luke Babbitt walks down the road in downtown Portland. You notice a tall white guy.
Yes.
But he's got a beard now. Are you going, Luke Babbitt?
I don't think I would.
That's a tall-ass white guy.
I don't think I would. There was a guy that came through yesterday in one of the afternoon foursomes that we all thought, this guy had to have played college basketball somewhere. He's like 6'9".
Oh, see, I was thinking more former lineman.
Ooh,
he kind of
like
had a
left tackle
build, like he used to be bigger.
He was bulky. He was a bigger guy.
And maybe he slimmed down in his post-playing days.
That was a big-ass dude, man. he was big. I also don't want to ask that question to those kind of people because then that might be a sensitive, sore topic for them. Like, hey, did you play sports anywhere? And if the answer's no, then there's like an immediate like, how did you with this frame not do anything with it? You couldn't have been a power forward at Concordia?
First of all, nobody follows up with, how did you not do anything with that?
No, but we're all thinking it.
Second of all.
Nah, I stopped playing sports in middle school. Like, dude, you're 6'8". Why did you not do this?
Here's an instant rebuttal to you. If literally a person walked up to you and go, are you the 2007 PIL player of the year?
You're damn right I am.
Would you be like offended by?
You're damn right I am.
What? No, you'd love it. You would love it. And if you were 6'5", and someone said, where did you play football, whether you did or not,
you'd go. You would love that?
Damn right.
Yeah,
damn right I look like I played football.
At that point, if I'm him and I didn't, I would probably just make up a story because you're not going to remember. Yeah, I played. You don't remember me?
You would lie?
I was a left guard at Washington State in 1997.
Sitting in here lying now?
Yeah, you don't know. You're not going to remember.
Speaking of lying. The winning group.
Yeah.
The morning round.
I didn't get in it. Did we ever find out what the afternoon round winner was?
I didn't hear the afternoon round.
Okay, we'll have to wait and hear from Isaac and Sue.
I don't hang around long enough for the end of the afternoon round.
No, it's a long day out there.
We talked about this with Isaac at lunch, or at the in-between lunch, and because he shows up back into the first round, right? Like very back into the first round. So he comes moseying in. He's got trophies in his hands. He's trying to give away. And we don't see him very much at all, right, because of the shifts. So we're talking, and he goes, what time did you guys get here? And you say what time you got here, and I say what time I got here, which was pretty early. And he goes, you guys leaving after this? And I go, probably shortly after. And he goes, yeah, that's what we should be doing. We should do this shift. I'm not getting here at 6 a.m. Not getting here at 7. Like, yeah, I know. But we hung out. I think we left at, 3:30?
Yeah, we made it to almost 4.
3:40?
I eat dinner at 3:30 and go to bed at 7. So we're brushing up against bedtime for old daddy dirt.
So we didn't hang out for the whole end of the second round. And so I don't know what the winning score is. Maybe we can find that out during the show. The winning round of the morning round.
Yes.
So this was also, you and I think, could be alone in this thought.
Mm.
I thought you and I were put in a very uncomfortable position.
Confront these people.
By management.
Is this score acceptable? And I want to file an HR complaint.
We need to talk
about
that.
Over the position that we were put into.
So they tally up these scores, and, you know, this poor Grant guy at Langdon, he's doing the best he can. He brings in a guy named Kevin. They're just like, they're trying to get all these scores. We've got all these rounds, right?
You got these paper scorecards you got to put into the system. Oh, yeah. So they show up on the TV, and then there's a live leaderboard.
Dirt's drinking beer, slapping his buddy's back, and I'm scrambling trying to figure out what prizes go to what thing because nothing is organized. So I'm working with Sage. I'm working with Elizabeth. Dirt's over there like, are you ready to talk yet? No. And I'm just over here writing, and I'm scrambling, and I'm like, where's the prize? I don't know what the prize is.
That's a pretty accurate depiction. Crawford had a good time yesterday.
We're grinding, right? We get to the score, and the winning team, we are told to call them up. The winning score, are you ready for this? 53 under.
Yeah.
And it was an entire team made of, get this, 18 and 20 handicaps.
Yes, it was.
Two 18s and two 20s, I believe is what I saw on the old handicap register. Now, I understand the format of this thing.
A lot of strokes.
You can score. It's very scoreable. I'll just say this. There was one scorecard that somebody at Langdon was going through that at that point was the leader. And I go up to him and I go, hey, just ballpark how much longer you think. I'm trying to coordinate with them. And he goes, well, I have to redo this entire scorecard. I look down the scorecard. There's a million scratches out. There's a million erasers. There's blackouts.
That was a 5. No, it was a 3.
And he goes, yeah, I got to change this. Like, they have a 40 under. And I go, 40 under?
40 under par?
He goes, yeah, man, I got to get through this. He had a couple more he had to get through. We get to the winning score, and he goes, I can't even try with this one. I go, what's the score? He goes, 53 under.
Now, no erasers on the scorecard. I will.
No, there was
that.
No.
Nothing was cleaned off or wiped off that scorecard.
No,
whatever they wrote
on the scorecard
was what they wrote down, and it stayed written down.
To their credit. But the score was brought into question. And in past years, we have shared before, we've had winning scores that make no sense, and people quickly come up, and they get big TVs, they put them in the trucks, and they never to be seen again. Largely, we think it's theft, but they're there, right? So Dusty has the idea of, why don't you call them to the front without saying they're the winner
about their score,
and we'll just ask them about this. And I'm instantly like, what are we gonna say to them? Like, I'm just thinking, okay, we call them up,
kick them out,
then
throw them out
of the guys.
Event.
It's a 53 under. Do you think they're gonna go, you caught us,
damn
or do you
it.
Think they're gonna go, yeah, and what do you think they did?
Hey, Andy, how'd you get a 98% on that test? Don't worry about it. All right.
Right. And then what do I say back?
What
you're
you
a liar?
Say? Yeah, prove it.
So we called them up. They all come out. We saw them on the par three.
Yeah,
delightful group.
Yes, they were.
And to their credit, they also hit some really good tee shots on that hole. So
they did.
Maybe they were in fuego. It can happen.
They played that hole well.
But we go 53 under. And at this point, now Dusty's kind of a mute. Cooley has left.
Yeah, he just backed out of the conversation.
I'm standing. They go, what do you mean? And then I turn to their group because I'm done being the bad guy. And I'm like, yeah, what do you mean?
Yeah, hey, what are you talking about here, huh? Who's accusing you of cheating?
And
I certainly was not doing that.
And then Odyssey Portland just kind of goes, All right. And that's it.
What
and we're like, okay, guys, thanks.
What are you going to do about it, man?
And then we announced him as the winner. We did nothing. And look, they probably, maybe they shot that score. I'll give them the credit. Like, whatever.
Here is the thing. So the format is a shamble.
Yes.
And the shamble is you take the best tee shot on every hole, and then everybody plays their ball in from there. So it's a mixture of a scramble and playing your own ball that I think is a really delightful round.
I like it too.
The best two scores on every hole count. So it's always the top two scores on each hole. Those aggregate up to add up to your total score. So somebody asking, like, how could you be 50 under par? And what did you shoot, a 20 on 18 holes, right? Like, no, it's two combined scores. But if you average that out,
you're a 20 handicap.
Right?
Yeah.
And this is where you can get some wonky scores because you get, if you have somebody who can hit good tee shots and you have a high handicap playing with them and they're in a good spot on every hole, the number of times they had double pops on each hole, which means you get two strokes. So if you double bogey a hole with your ball, that two pops down to a par.
Yeah.
And if it's a bogey, it pops down to a birdie. And if you par that hole, that double pops down to an eagle. You can rack up some pretty low scores pretty quickly.
Yeah.
Now, if you know, 50 under is a little egregious.
53 under.
53 under is a little egregious.
Pretty high.
But the double pops can get you there.
Yeah.
That's what can happen with double pops.
So look. Everybody's questioning.
Yes, we asked.
They seem pretty straight up, like, just played good golf.
Take your word for it, man.
Hey, man, if I got to play with Dirt Strives.
Right.
And my handicap's actually not very good. Like, we would probably have a pretty, they cheated score because right. I'm like a 16, 17.
Right. I thought about you and Joe Fish from this.
Yeah, exactly.
From our round on Friday. Because Joe Fish can't hit a tee shot to save his life. But his iron play and his wedge play was really good.
Yeah.
Like, his 100 yards in felt really solid.
Yep.
He's got a little sawed-off swing.
Yep.
You give him with his 18 handicap in the middle of the fairway on every hole,
yeah,
he can make bogey from there, and guess what that turns into?
Exactly.
A par or a birdie, depending on how many pops he's got.
So, yeah, to their defense, it's possible.
It's just possible.
It's such a low score.
And it beat the second place score by 13 shots. 13 shots.
Don't get that very often.
That does not happen.
But it was a delightful time. Langdon was dialed. You guys are great. You're always the best. And we love doing the event. Maybe next year we'll add the football with something else.
Yes. I think we need more sporting. Like, bring out like a
cornhole? What's like another thing we could add out there?
That's not a bad idea. You could bring a couple of gloves and a baseball. Throw that around.
I like that.
Set up a little badminton net. You do a little boop, little over the
little
net.
Birdie. Little
Can
birdie.
I ask real quick, did Joe Fisher run routes with the football?
Oh, we didn't have him run routes yesterday. That's a great point. We should have.
We're over it. I did bring this up. I said, hey, Joe, why don't you go over there to a Biletnikoff Award winner, which is the award for the best receiver in the entire country of college football.
An elite route runner.
Why don't you go tell him that you're the best route runner of anybody you've ever met?
Show him your corner post now. Let's go.
And he starts laughing. And I'm like, seriously, if you're going to have
the
opinion,
go tell the
best one. How many have won the award? Like, he's one of how many? He's a college football Hall of Fame player.
Oregon's never won that award. He's in the I remember seeing his stuff in the College Football Hall of Fame.
Yes.
When we walked through in Atlanta, when we were there.
I mean, go tell that guy you're the best route runner you've ever met. He didn't do it.
I'm now upset at myself for not remembering him calling himself route running Jesus, and we didn't attempt.
I called him out for it. I called him out in front of his mechanic.
I wanted to see some routes yesterday. That's a missed opportunity.
Well, it was a good time. Thanks for everybody for showing up for the 12th annual. And if you missed out, join us for the 13th annual, because I'm sure it's going to happen. We got a loaded show today. Obviously, a lot to get to. We briefly touched on Mike and Ori. We'll get back into that today. Dirt and Sprague, let's get it going. 105.1 The Fan. All right, welcome back in. The Blazers have hired a coach. We will go to Minnesota to learn about Mike and Ori, the new head coach, coming up today.
I'm ready to yell about the contract.
Are you?
I'm ready.
That's the important stuff, man.
That is it.
We need to yell about contracts. Anybody want to yell about our contract? Can we all just start yelling about each other's contracts?
Why would he suck it?
How cheap! Can we all do that, please?
Let's do it. Let's all yell today. Nice. I'm ready to yell.
Want to yell about Moda Center funding today?
Yeah, we could do that, too, if you want.
Maybe we could play Buster Posey.
No, I don't want to
ducking
do
and
one.
Dodging pride questions.
Dodging and weaving.
Man.
Things somehow are getting worse for my organization, and I didn't think that was possible.
You want to talk about Brendan Sorsby again and
let's
how much
do
of
that.
A pain in my ass he's becoming?
That story just won't go away. Have fun in Canada, buddy.
Like, so many stories have such negative slants on them. Let's, speaking of negative slants.
Oh, what are we going to start with today?
How boring.
It was pretty bad.
Was the NBA draft
pretty
yesterday?
Bad. Pretty bad.
This has been billed as one of the more talented first rounds in a while. This was highly regarded as a first round that, you know, people looked at the talent and said, hey, man, these could be all generational guys. In fact, when you were watching or following anybody that covered the draft, if you did, you didn't get hot takes that were like, DeBons is a mistake, Boozer would be a mistake,
right.
Peterson would be a mistake. You had people that were questioning Peterson because, you know, Peterson had some stuff go on at Kansas. But, like, the overwhelming majority of the league and people covering the league seem to be, these are the three best players.
Yes.
And then, hey, there's Caleb Wilson. He's the fourth. Like, I think the entire lottery had all the names that people expected to have in it. Now, the order of operation was a little different. Some guys, Darius Acuff was destined to be a king for, like, the last 3 weeks.
Right.
Guess who drafted Darius Acuff? Sacramento Kings, right?
The center for Michigan that went to OKC at 12 was one of the few reaches that maybe went a little bit sooner than some are imagining, but nothing overly shocking happened.
Yeah, but they want, you know, they want height.
Yeah.
And then Dusty May goes to Dallas. Who did everybody say Dallas was going to draft? Maurez Johnson Jr. It just became a very obvious draft. And maybe in some ways that is to blame. I'm actually going to lay the blame somewhere else, though.
Mm.
I just found the entire production terrible.
Mm.
And I'm a big NBA fan. Part of the reason I left when I left the Fan Golf Classic is I love the NBA draft. I wanted to watch the NBA draft.
We're starting right around 5 o'clock. Let's get home, watch this thing.
And, yeah, we didn't have a pick. So, like, the interest locally here wasn't really that big, and we don't have to get into everything. We can. I thought there were interesting things and takeaways.
Mm-hmm.
I just found the show to be terrible, and it shouldn't. You had Jay Billis.
Yeah.
Tim Legler. Bobby Marks to give the financial stuff. Shams had come in with the breaking news thing. I know people hate him, but you still had Shams in there.
It wasn't a lot for him to report because there weren't that many trades.
I don't know what it was, man. Maybe it was the way that they did the post-pick interview, which I thought was awful.
You know my stance on those. They should not exist on the – if you want to give me an alternative broadcast
that does that,
people can go watch family interviews for anybody who cares about that, by all means, do it. To have it take – there's not that much time between NBA picks.
No, it's five
minutes. It's not a 10-minute clock.
Yeah.
So you make the pick. The kid walks on stage. You get an initial thought from Billis or Legler, whoever.
Sure.
And, okay, I like this player and I like this about his game, blah, blah, blah. You get the picture with Adam Silver. They go sit down and you get an immediate Lisa Salter's interview. And how many times did then she say, okay, let's send it back to the podium because here's Adam's, like, that was it. They just move on to the next pick.
I know.
And then you're on to the next one.
Well, and then also, like, no offense, I just found the interviews terrible.
I worked really hard. It's a blessing. Like, it's the same answer over and over again.
Who was it? It might have been Peterson's dad. He was holding the mic, or he was sitting down. He's holding the microphone around his knee.
Yeah, I can't hear him.
He's sitting up, and she's like, how do you feel about your kid? All right, great, thanks. Let's send it back to the podium for Adam Silver. I'm just like, can anybody with a brain tell these people to hold the microphone up? Like, they don't know. They've never done this.
It was like half of the interviews, too.
Yes. Hey, you got to keep the mic up near your mouth because people don't know.
They have no idea.
They think it'll just pick everything up, right?
We have that when we interview people in studio. They'll kind of talk too far back. Hey, can you just
get a little closer?
Move a little bit. Got to get in there. You got to make out with that thing, man.
Yeah, no. And I don't know, man. I find it a useless thing of content to create. I don't need to know.
I'd much rather have basketball minds talking about the player.
Tell me the fit.
How it fits with the roster.
That's what I want.
The idea of, you know, Peterson, for example, going to a team who he didn't work out for, and they did that last year, and do we foresee problems there?
Is Peterson worth taking over Boozer? Because Boozer seems to be the consummate professional who grew up around the league with his dad.
Right.
Whereas Peterson had all this creatine, I'm not playing 15 minutes before the tip. You had all this drama at Kansas. That was good stuff. I ended up muting the draft and then watching the No Ceilings guys online
to do their reaction.
And that's
recap.
The other thing is you got all these people that actually their entire careers are devoted to breaking down prospects. It doesn't mean they're right about every prospect.
No, you can't be.
But dude, I got people on the dais that don't watch college basketball.
Yeah.
And like they're not. I love Tim Legler.
He's an NBA guy.
He's an NBA guy. Like, is Tim Legler, he's just looking at numbers. Oh, he's a spot-up shooter. Like, you're looking at numbers, which is fine. Like,
right.
I get it, but you didn't really
There's people
watch.
You could get on that stage who are much more, have much more knowledge about the players they were at the college level, how their games look, their strengths and weaknesses. And I think Legler, he probably did his homework, but it's just different when you don't follow it year-round, right? Like, I put myself into this kind of category. I don't watch a lot of college basketball. But then you get closer to the draft, and you start looking at mocks, and you see numbers, and like, all right, you generally know the names and where guys are going to likely go. So if one sticks out like a sore thumb, you could say, whoa, he went there? Help, we did that last year. I read all the mocks leading into the draft, and then this guy named Young Hansen that I'd never really heard of before, we decided to take in the first round because he didn't show up in any first-round mock draft. And so that was kind of in a blind spot for me. I'm with you. I am 100% in the stance of the player interview should happen on a different platform. I don't think it does a service to anybody. I don't think we get anything out of it as fans. You understand being incredibly happy for them and their family and how big of a moment that is for them personally. I don't need to see that on the broadcast. They're all going to say the same thing. It's going to be the same answer over and over again.
Yeah.
And you got a small window of time. It also doesn't help when nothing that outrageous happens and there are no trades. Because there were reports.
There were movebacks, but yeah, no.
I mean,
big,
sure,
like
a slight.
Trades.
And you had something in the days leading up, like we weren't on the air to talk about the Randall trade and you know them getting rid of a pick. And now, okay, that changes it a little bit. There were rumors that the Clippers were maybe listening at 5, that they could move down. Didn't happen. Took a player.
Well, they also took a player that, like, I didn't I saw a decent amount of mocks. I didn't see Keaton Wagler.
Sure, that was maybe the first surprise of the draft.
Wagler, okay.
The first surprise of the draft at number 5. Golden State had this at 11. They were listening to offers on their pick.
Did you see, by the way, that video?
I did see that. That was maybe the most entertaining thing of the night, was Mike Dunleavy yelling at his owner that he made the right decision about who they drafted.
Well, that was the other part. I want to try to see if we get a backstory on that from anybody of like, so they went, if you missed it, there was a live video feed of Lacob and Dunleavy in the war room, and as the pick is being announced, they show Dunleavy with his hands out, like almost like a shrugging, like, what do you want me to do type vibe. And then on the other side is the owner, Joe Lacob, and he's just like flabbergasted. Dunleavy steps away to take a phone call, and as he steps away, Lacob just turns around and shrugs his shoulders, like, what are we doing? Like, I'm almost... Did he think they were trading that pick?
They were rumored to be listening to offers for number 11, and then they ended up drafting the player.
See, that's what I'm in. And look, Linda Borg is going to be a good player, I think. We'll see how he fits in Golden State.
Yeah.
But for a team that's kind of in the all-in win now, but they've also been trying to dance with the future stuff.
You got a few more years left of Steph. It makes more sense to likely trade the
pick.
That
struck me as owner clearly thought that was going to be a trade. Was told it was going to be a trade,
yeah.
And as the pick was being set to be put in...
Wait a minute, we're taking who?
Found out the GM was not trading, or a team backed out, and they had to make a pick, and so they go, let's try to get the next Draymond Green here.
Yeah, nobody trading into the lottery on draft night or making a player trade. Like, it lessens the excitement level a little bit. And then, you know, there was some speculation going into the draft that you might get, like, you know, you had the bet, and other people's thought that maybe Peterson could sneak into number one, and that gained a little momentum. It's not a bad, you take the odds, like, whatever.
Dude. I took 3-1 odds.
Put a couple of bucks on it, and yep. It might end up happening. It didn't end up happening, but that, I think, lessened also the excitement of it. Like, if you would have gotten first pick of the draft, Washington Wizards, here's Adam Silver, they take Darren Peterson. That would have been a curveball right out of the gate. And all of a sudden,
day of, people thought DeBonso was going to be number
one. And then you assume DeBonso will go 2, and then maybe it follows chalk from there. But that at least wakes you up and gets your attention. They announced DeBonso first, wasn't a surprise. We all assumed that Peterson would go number 2. That happened. Mm-hmm. Once that took place, you knew Boozer was going 3rd. And then there was no chance that Caleb Wilson was going to fall outside of the top 4. And some people maybe argue he's the steal of the draft from North Carolina going to Chicago at 4th overall. So it did lack a little pizzazz for an incredibly deep and talented draft class. Not a lot of shakeups, not a lot of big movement, and a lot of chalk, it felt like, in the lottery, which just kind of leads to, hey, I read mock drafts, I know how this is going to go, and that's likely how it went.
So, a lot of good guards taken. Mikael Brown at 6. I thought that was a little surprising.
Had a run on guards, dude. After the kid from Illinois.
Draft,
the kid from Illinois goes, all of a sudden it's guard.
I really like Braden Burries. I thought Milwaukee had a nice little night. Mm-hmm. I love Merez Johnson Jr. at Dallas. I think that's going to be a good fit. I had one big takeaway. Like, Chicago might end up being really fun here. Chicago got some really athletic players. They got Nick Claxton in a trade. We'll get to some of that coming up. But
I'm a big Caleb Wilson guy.
So I have one takeaway, and that takeaway is, did anybody notice what the Spurs did?
I did not. What did the Spurs do last night?
Well, so the Spurs...
I turned it off after about pick 16.
You didn't miss it. Dude, I'm telling you, snooze fest draft. I could not believe how boring the draft was.
Yeah. I wanted to see who our pick would have been and the guy that we could now talk about. I wanted to see, had we not have made the playoffs or if the pick it didn't convey, who's the player would
have
been
around there. Here's another thing. Stop having the damn draft in Brooklyn. I'm so tired of it in Brooklyn.
It's really stupid.
Start moving it around.
Adam Silver.
Literally, the NFL's like, blueprint to make it fun.
Go city to city, market to market.
How many people even didn't even know the draft was happening?
Brooklyn has no fans. They showed like 4 Brooklyn Nets fans when they were on the... they were on the clock making their pick, and those had to have been paid actors. They don't have fans.
So the Spurs had the 20th pick, and they took the forward out of the Kentucky, Jaden, I don't know how to say his last name, but he's Quintance. He's injured, so he won't play right away. 6'11", 7 foot. And then they had the 20th pick trade. They had a trade with, or the 26th pick with Denver.
Yeah.
You know who that pick was?
I did not see who they took.
Terrace Reed Jr. from UConn, the center.
They just got more size.
The Spurs are just like,
let's build it.
We're going to have a 7-foot team.
We're
with
the
Dylan
monstars
Harper.
Now.
Yes.
Dylan Harper leading the show. Our shooting guard is 6'11". Our
crazy.
Small forward is 7 feet. Our power forward is 7'1", and our center is 7'5".
It's insane, dude. The Spurs are just like, how can we just keep being 7 foot at every spot, every player?
Is Luke Kornet on an expiring deal? Is he still going to be around next year?
I thought it was on a multi-year deal.
Because that would be one that makes sense to take couple of bigs if he's going to be out, you know, after this year. But if he's around a couple more years, I guess stash a couple of guys, see if one of them turns out to be another good big. That's the beauty of being in a position like San Antonio. And OKC's been this the last couple of years. Like, dude, roll the dice on a guy. If it doesn't work out, you're still in a very good spot. You like a player, stash him for a year or two, see what you got down the road.
So we'll get to some trade stuff that happened in the association. We missed yesterday's show, so it was obviously a big trade. And then Mike Inouye hired as the new head coach of the Trailblazers. We'll get to that at the top of the hour. Dirt and Sprague back with more on The Fan. We put a poll question up yesterday afternoon around the fourth pick of the NBA draft. We broke in yesterday live. If you hang out with us for a best of, you're a true P1 and we love you to death. So maybe you were able to hear us live because we hopped on at 9 a.m. kind of unannounced. Hey, big hire happened. We just gave some thoughts for one segment. But we'll get to Mike Inouye stuff. We did a poll question. I put one up last night. And it was around Mike Inouye. And the poll question is, do you care the Blazers gave new head coach Mike Inouye a one-year guarantee on his three-year deal? Yes or no?
Very simple.
Very simple. You can vote at Dirt and Sprague. Would you care to know which one's winning right now?
Well, I voted on it yesterday, and I saw last night. No, I don't, there might have been more votes that piled in, trickled in over the night.
Oh, you voted?
I did vote.
I did not vote on this.
I did vote on this one. Mm. I thought it was a great question, and at the time that I voted, the no was overwhelmingly winning.
The no is overwhelmingly winning still. Now, if you think yes, I didn't put this to be like some hot take guy.
No.
I'd love to hear all sides of the argument.
Yes.
And we'll get to the Inouye stuff coming up at the top of the hour. But you can vote yes or no. If you think yes, go vote there. It is overwhelmingly no right now.
So yeah, what's the number at? 80%?
It's 80.7 to 19.3.
Yeah.
So we'll get to that coming up. But we were off yesterday playing a little golf or watching people play golf. And we had a monster trade in the association.
We did.
Giannis Antetokounmpo is a Miami Heat.
Come on down. The package finally paid off for Miami. They've been trying to dangle that package for big players for how long now, and they finally got their fish.
So let me ask you this.
Yeah.
I don't really care about the Giannis part of that. We knew he was going to Boston, Miami, and now he's going to Miami. They got Bobby Portis in the deal.
Yeah.
And Milwaukee took the slop. They took the Hero, Jaquez, Jakachonis. Who was the other one? There's one more player. Oh, Khalil Ware.
Yep.
And then three firsts, a first swap, and a second. That's the trade.
Including their pick last night in the NBA draft.
Exactly. Who Milwaukee got. Who did they draft?
Nate
Ament. Yeah.
Is that how you say his last name? Yeah.
Yeah. So Milwaukee's clearly in the rebuild, but they've taken on some players. Reportedly, they want to be good again, like, quick. They don't want to be in the crap for 5 to 6 to 7 to 8 years. They want to turn and burn this thing. Which I find interesting because you could have gotten Jaylen Brown, which I think would have helped you not stay in the crap for very long, but they chose Tyler Hero, the hometown hero.
Well, the Haslam quote was, we don't want to deal with this again, and they allegedly behind the scenes thought that Jaylen Brown would do this to them and that a year from now he's demanding a trade out of Milwaukee and they got to go through it again.
I thought there was a really good question asked by somebody on Twitter a couple days ago, and it was, has there ever been a championship owner selling a team and a championship new owner having just won a title buying the same team? So the Vulcans win the Super Bowl. They sell the Blazers.
Yes.
Dundon buys the Blazers, wins
and
the Stanley Cup.
Yes, yeah.
I thought that was a really fun thing to think about.
Our last two owners have each won a championship in different sports in the last, 16 months.
In the same vein, have we ever had an owner trade caliber of player Myles Garrett and Giannis within 2 weeks of two different sports? I don't think you could find one.
The two arguably best players in the history of each of their respective franchises.
Friggin' Jimmy Haslam, dude. What a couple days for him.
Guy's going through it.
But I am kind of wondering, like, if Milwaukee wants to be good, and maybe they will be better than we think, were they better suited to take that deal or to take the Boston deal and flip Brown the way Cronin did when we traded Dame to Milwaukee? Like,
right.
Because if they didn't think Brown was going to stay, I understand that sentiment. But, like, why would you not? I just can't get my head around not getting Brown, debating if we keep him, and if ultimately we think he's never going to stay in Milwaukee, flip him. Because you can get some good stuff for Jaylen Brown.
Yeah, I mean, my thought process if I were Milwaukee would have been, I'm going to take the Boston deal. Now, I don't know how many of those other young players were involved because there's reporting about what they were willing or not willing to put in.
And Shireman or Gonzalez.
Right, from a young player
guys,
perspective, and some people say Boston didn't want to, they're not even considering the notion of trading those guys. even let's just say on the surface level, it's Brown and two first round picks, which it seems like that has been agreed upon. That was definitely a part of the offer. I would have taken that and then flipped Brown and just started a rebuild there, because I don't with the spot that they're in without their future draft picks. Now, they did get Miami's, but I don't imagine. What is it? Two picks and two pick swaps.
It's three picks and a pick swap.
OK, three picks and a pick swap. I don't tend to think that those would be good picks, but we don't know. Right. The future can play out in different ways that surprised us when we got Milwaukee's picks. We weren't sure where those were going to look like, and they ended up looking pretty decent now. Now that they're coming up on cashing in. I just would have gone that route because I think you're going to be a feisty little team with good players. Mm-hmm. You're going to try hard, and you got a lot of bodies now. But ultimately, you're still missing the most important piece in the NBA. And if Tyler Hero is your best player, we saw what he was as a second best player on Miami. They were a play-in team at best. You don't have a Bam Adebayo on this team. And so if you're going to build around Tyler Hero, I don't like your chances very much. Maybe they landed a guy in the draft last night.
They might be able to flip Hero, though, because teams need a player. Like, Detroit needs a Tyler Hero.
You need a ball-creating score guy who can
spot up and shoot.
And maybe that will be their thought, is let's move on from him. But if that would have been the case, if you were willing to trade the next guy, why did you not go get Jaylen Brown, who could have gotten you a haul? I don't understand that. But the Miami,
Milwaukee could have got our deal.
Yeah.
The Shaden Jeremy deal with picks.
Yeah, we would have given up five first round picks for Jaylen Brown.
I don't know about five, but we would have
given
up.
At least some pick swaps and happening.
We would have done the make the money work thing, right? Yeah. And Shaden Sharp being included in that would have been somewhat exciting to sell to their fans.
You got a young player.
Plus the pick. I don't know. I was evaluating it and I get it. Like Giannis, I think, wanted to go to Miami a little more than Boston is how I read it. But those were the two teams he wanted to go to the most. It just certainly was a choice to take that deal because I don't think that deal was amazing. And I'm also thinking it from our perspective of getting a guy that you know you can flip into some more stuff.
Right.
Milwaukee literally watched us do that with Dame.
Yeah.
I just would have thought they would have thought Brown's not going to stay. We can flip Brown. And teams like Portland and fill in the blank others.
Helps our rebuild a lot.
Gives us maybe another piece that's really good paired with future stuff.
That's certainly the way that I would have handled it. I'm also not going to sit here and act like the offer is terrible. Like four first round picks, one of them being a swap. That they needed draft capital desperately. They don't have draft picks to trade.
Well,
they don't have things
not
to play
an
with.
Awful player. Hawkes is a role guy.
Hawkes could be a good player. Jakachonis maybe is an up and coming guy that pops in a couple
of
years.
They didn't want to reportedly give him up in that trade.
So they got him. And then to your point, you keep Hero. He's a decent scorer. You move on from him. Maybe you get a couple of more. Maybe you get a first round pick out of that trade. So there's other pathways that you can build. I would have done the Boston deal, but I'm not going to sit here and act like Miami's offer was trash and there was nothing meaningful in there. Reminds me a lot of the Denver New York trade years ago. Carmelo Anthony going to New York. I don't know how Bam and Giannis are going to do in Miami. That's, time will tell on that. And I think Milwaukee can be feisty good because they got a lot of bodies now that are decent level players, and they're going to play hard every night, and they're going to catch some people by surprise.
I think the East is going to be tough for them. I think they can be like a they care team, and they might catch you on a night.
Seven seed, eight seed, somewhere in there.
I don't know if I go there, but I think they can continue to build that up quicker, which makes me wonder again.
What do those picks look like?
Yeah, and I saw people saying the opposite of what you said, that the Miami Heat picks are better than our Bucks picks now because we don't know where Giannis is going to be in 4 years, even if he signs the max extension. You assume he will.
Yeah,
I know. It's a whole debatable thing, this draft pick capital. I don't think anybody really understands it yet, including the league itself, because we didn't get a lot of trades yesterday.
No, we did not.
During the draft. So
I was bummed he went to Miami, though. I like Giannis. Boston wouldn't have been
better. I
would have
been bummed about Boston, dude. I didn't want either of those destinations.
Yeah. Minnesota would have been cool, though.
It would have sucked for us, but it would have been exciting to watch him play with
Ant. From a rooting interest, I'm just like, him and Bam. I'm curious to see how that works out for you.
Loaded second hour, Mike Inouye, your new head coach of the Portland Trail Blazers. We'll start there. Hour two, Dirt and Sprague, Portland Sports Leader 105.1 The Fan.